This is Tom Valentine's Radio Free America, the talk show for intelligent Americans, brought to you by freedom-loving, God-fearing Americans who are searching for the truth. And now here's your host, Tom Valentine.
Ooh, darn, I lost my page. All right, it doesn't matter. My guest is Norman Finkelstein. He's the author of this book, The Holocaust Industry, and very briefly, put this down because you're going to want to write to me if you want to chew me out or anything else, make suggestions. Send checks. Anything more than $20 will get you a copy of this book. And it's actually, I'm considering it as a contribution to keep Radio Free America going and expanding. It's RFA, that's Radio Free America, RFA, Post Office Box 11654. That's Post Office Box 11654, Naples, Florida. Very nice little town, except in the summertime. Naples, Florida. Zip code is 34101. 34101. And this book will be going out automatically to every donation at $20. And that's a good deal. Now, I brought up the name of Goldhagen and this Holocaust favorable book, Jonah Goldhagen. I have not read it. I ignored it totally. And was that wise?
Well, in my opinion, as a general rule, everyone should form his or her opinion on his or her own.
All right,
no
I agree.
One should, nobody should take, you know, accept on faith another person's word or another person's opinion. We have to all learn to think for ourselves. That having been said, if you have to choose between books in order, because obviously we can't read everything, if you have to choose between books to read, I would say your time would probably have been better spent reading Harry Potter or a Stephen King novel than reading Daniel Goldhagen's Hitler's Willing Executioners. One, it's miserably written, and two, it's total nonsense. At least Harry Potter has the redeeming value of being reasonably well written. As far as I could tell, Goldhagen's book has no redeeming virtue.
Well, I don't understand how anybody could write a whole book that the Germans, driven by pathological hatred, they leaped at the opportunity to get with Hitler and go out and kill Jews.
Well, number one, it does have a certain kind of appeal to Jews, because Jews have now been raised to believe that the whole world wants to kill them. Of course, it has some basis in experience, namely the colossal tragedy during World War II, the colossal crime during World War II, but that basis has now been cultivated systematically, cultivated and nurtured in order to create among Jews a complete paranoia, the belief that any second now all the Gentiles may want to turn on us, or may turn on us, and so of course we need Israel to protect us against this homicidally anti-Semitic world. And so it does ring true, that book, for many Jews, which is one reason why it received so much attention, because it confirmed a certain cultivated ideological paranoia among Jews.
That's very well said. Now, we got a break coming up, and after the break, I'm going to bring up this Yehuda Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he kind of actually embraced the dogma that Goldhagen talks about. But I have another question about him. I read an article in, I believe, the Jerusalem Post several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor Bauer had lowered the estimated number of Jews killed during the Holocaust down from 6 million. And I don't see that documentary thing in here in years, but I was going to ask you about that because you have so many good footnotes, it might be in there. I'm Tom Valentine. We shall be right back.
This is Tom Valentine's Radio Free America, the talk show for intelligent Americans. Brought to you by freedom-loving, God-fearing Americans who are searching for the truth. And now here's your host, Tom Valentine.
All right, we are talking tonight a book called The Holocaust Industry. And it is extremely well-researched. And the exploitation of the Holocaust for the benefit of Israel and for the benefit of a number of very interesting groups. We're going to get to them now. But before I move on, I have to hit into the revisionists and so on, because you mentioned them in here. And you brought up the name of Yehuda Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking through your footnotes as I was reading, wondering if you would cover that. Because there was a time when he wrote an article in the Jerusalem Post saying that we must not exaggerate the numbers of the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And he urged people, he says, to be more realistic, that 6 million was not a correct figure. And, of course, that's an extremely important figure in the whole Holocaust industry.
Well, yes and no. First of all, from a moral point of view, it hardly makes much of a difference whether it's 4 million or 6 million. The number is huge. The number is colossal. By any reckoning, it was a spectacular crime that was committed. So I myself don't think it makes all that much of a difference whether the figure is 4 million or 6 million, though the best evidence now would show it's about probably between 5.1 and 5.3 million. That's the best evidence.
All right, well, those are new figures to me. I was down around 4.2 with Yehuda Bauer. But see, I'm
no,
with you.
I don't think that's accurate.
Right. Well,
important point, in my opinion, is that if you keep inflating the number of survivors, then you inevitably have to deflate the number of those who were killed.
I agree.
And so the Holocaust industry, by constantly inflating the number of survivors, have themselves become the main spreaders of Holocaust denial. If you're going to claim that 1 million Holocaust survivors are still alive today, that must mean that about 6 million were alive in 1945. Well, if 6 million were alive in 1945, it's not possible that Hitler killed 6 million, because there were only 7 million Jews under Nazi control during World War II. So if 6 million were alive, only 1 million could have been killed. So if you keep inflating the number of survivors, you end up being a Holocaust denier.
Right.
And that's my main point.
And it is a good point. That the thing I wanted to point out is that the revisionists and the so-called Holocaust deniers argue over the details. And to me, any time a government treats its people in such an arbitrary, capricious, and horrible way, that government is out of control, and there have been a lot of governments that have gotten out of control, and governments kill more of their own people than they kill other governments' people throughout history.
Well, I agree with that. Look, states are evil institutions. States are basically instruments of force, and they use that force either to repress those on the inside or, if opportunities avail themselves, to repress and oppress those on the outside. So I agree with you. We should always be suspicious of states because they commit many evil deeds. And the best way to curb the power of states and to curb the evil deeds of states is lots of free and open discussion, like your radio program, and an active citizenry which monitors and carefully watches all the actions of a state.
That's very good, very well said, and we better watch ours today, I'll tell you. All right. Now,
today and tomorrow, always,
yeah.
Because states are evil institutions.
Yes. Yeah. You mentioned Deborah Lipstadt, who sued David Irving, and you point out that this is the thing I thought was very interesting about it, the immoral equivalencies. Don't you dare say, as I did once, I made a mistake and I brought it up, the Armenian Holocaust, and I was accosted by several Jewish people in the audience when I did that, because the Holocaust cannot be given to Armenians or to Pol Pot victims in Cambodia.
Well, the main premise of the Holocaust industry, the unstated main premise of the Holocaust industry, is that you can't compare the suffering of Jews to anyone else's suffering because Jews are better. It's pure chauvinism. It's putting one person's life above another and saying one life is more important, or the loss of that life is more important than the loss of another life. Now, that's chauvinism, that's racism, and it ought to be rejected. There are different ways you can compare, and there are different ways that you can contrast. But there have been many crimes in human history, and frankly, in my opinion, it's the responsibility, the moral responsibility of any citizenry to first look at itself. It's very easy to wag your finger at the Germans and say, oh, how terrible the Germans are. That's very easy. But here's the question I put to your audience. What would we think if a German were to say, look how terrible the Americans are, how they exterminated the Native Americans, how they killed 4 million Vietnamese people, how they enslaved African Americans. We would say, look who's talking. You mind your business, and we'll mind ours. Well, it's the same sort of hypocrisy when we constantly talk about other people's crimes, show the moral courage and consistency to look at ourselves.
Yes, and Palestinians today are pointing at Israel and saying, you're just like Nazi Germany, on you, you're treating us the same way.
Yes, look at yourself. That's the real moral challenge. Everybody in your listening audience knows it's easy as pie to criticize others. The challenge is finding the moral strength to criticize yourself.
Okay, earlier you said, in the first section of this thing we were talking about, it was $60 billion that the Germans have paid out. And now we're up to the double shakedown. Evidently, $60 billion isn't enough for the Holocaust industry. They want to get a lot more, and we're in this very interesting thing of the Swiss bankers.
I call it the double shakedown because there's a handful of crooks who, number one, fabricated all of these charges against European governments, beginning with the Swiss banks, claiming they stole billions of dollars belonging to Jews, and when they exploited the Nazi Holocaust, mobilized the U.S. government, mobilized the media, mobilized state controllers across the country to put pressures on the Swiss, in effect blackmailing and extorting them. When they got the money, which they claimed was for needy Holocaust victims, when they got the money, when they shook down the European government, they then proceeded to shake down the actual victims of the Nazi Holocaust, those needy Holocaust survivors, and kept the money for themselves.
Well, Senator D'Amato's got to get paid. He does a lot of lobbying for this Swiss bank scam.
Well, yeah, Senator D'Amato, He was, they all got, I mean, I list the salaries and the fringe benefits they all got. They all made out very well. You know, the main Jewish organizations claim they collected from Europe between $11 and $13 billion. That's not a bad day's work.
No, it's not. And they have managed then to maintain the Holocaust industry on a very high level.
Yeah, you know, it's very well funded. It's obviously pervasive. I don't know if your listeners way out where read the New York Times, but there's no topic in the New York Times that receives the kind of coverage that the Nazi Holocaust does, except maybe the weather and the phases of the moon. Apart from those possible exceptions, no topic gets more coverage than the Nazi Holocaust.
That's a fact. In fact, I think somebody did a LexisNexis study on it. You did. Okay.
Last year, they had 273 articles on the Nazi Holocaust. If you consider there are only 365 days in the year, you might just as well rename the paper the Holocaust Times and have as its slogan not all the news that fit the print, but all Holocaust all the time.
Okay. All right. We've gotten it. And, folks, let me tell you, this book is extremely well documented. And the footnotes are there. They're very interesting reading. I'm going to open up the telephones now. The number to call to join us and be on the program is 800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. And the first is Pack Rat, my chat room buddy. Hello, Pack.
Well, hello, Tom. As you know in the chat room, that's one of our most discussed topics. But thank you, Tom and Dr. Finkelstein, for taking my call. First, I wanted to ask the good doctor to correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told by a Jewish person that The Painted Bird was a book of fiction.
The Painted Bird was on the back listed officially as a book of fiction. However, Jerzy Kaczynski claimed it was an accurate account of what he experienced during the Nazi Holocaust.
Again, he had a lot of play in the media, I understand. Right,
and
hang in there. We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
GB.
All right. Yeah, Jeffrey Stokes and Elliot Smith, Fremont Smith, wrote the Jerzy Kaczynski's Tainted Words in the
Tainted
Village Voice,
words, yeah.
1982. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, Tom?
Yep.
It's
go ahead,
The reason I said doctor, I'm thinking PhD because I worked in research, and I want to say to Mr. Finkelstein that the caliber of his research and how he presents his data is at the PhD level. And I'd say kudos and continue on. I was hesitant to say that, but basically what you've pointed out is just how brilliant they are with the doublespeak and the propaganda and the pressure. But with all of that aside, everything that that Mr. Finkelstein says is not only plausible, it's quite logical. And if the key is if the people could get past the emotion and the conditioning that has allowed this continued perpetuation of this hope. As I said, it's brilliant, but there's so many comments and questions that remain steadfast, and they bear out in the manner in which Mr. Finkelstein goes about his research. But it's this continued cycle of these Holocaust movies, Holocaust museums, TV specials.
Well, what would you do, Pack? Would you do away with them all of a sudden?
No, not do away with them all of a sudden, but I'm going to get to that.
Why not?
That doctor, because you have to counter that. You recall B.F. Skinner, and, you know, you're talking about your operant and classical conditioning with Pavlov, and one of the fathers of behaviorism was Dr. Watson. All of this is through operant and classical conditioning, and not only that, they do that. They take our tax dollars, our consumer dollars, the fruits of our labor, and milk our emotions to promote these nefarious agendas. And the only method to counter the doublespeak is to get the truth out there. And
I agree with that.
I'm going to have to, we got a lot of callers, and I'm going to have to let you let that one be your shot, but it was a very good shot.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do, as she said?
There are two issues. Number one, there's the question of looking at yourself first. So just as Americans would find it grossly hypocritical if Germans erected a Native American extermination museum somewhere in Berlin, before we erect museums to the crimes of the Germans, we should be erecting museums to memorialize the victims of our crimes. That's the order of moral precedence. Number two, there's a simple question of quantity. I say enough already with the Nazi Holocaust. Many other people in the history of humanity have suffered. It's time already, in fact, it's time long past, to open up our hearts and our minds to the sufferings of the rest of humanity.
And you say that in your book.
Correct.
And you bring it out very clear. Let's go to Brian in New York.
Good evening, Mr. Valentine. Mr. Finkelstein, thank you for taking my call. Gentlemen, an Alfred Pike's plan for three world wars is bringing a Luciferian one world government. The third world war will be Zionism versus Islam. And after that war, religion will be placed with reason. The Holocaust is a tragedy used by the Luciferians in order that when the United Nations was created, the State of Israel was created for the third world war. Remember, the Holocaust is an invaluable tragedy for the Luciferians to keep the State of Israel a reality so that World War III will happen. This is why the Luciferians will not tolerate any criticism in any way, shape, or form in the matter of the Holocaust, because it is essential to bring in the New World Order. Remember, without the Holocaust, no State of Israel, no Third World War. This is the plan of Lucifer, gentlemen.
All right, Brian.
I don't know who Lucifer is, but I do know that there are a lot of folks out there who we can all clearly identify, not folks like Lucifer, who may or may not be out there for all I know, but folks who we can clearly identify who are causing all sorts of problems for the world. As Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa, put it, the United States has now become the main menace to world peace. And for those of us who are concerned, as I agree with your caller, about the dangers of another world war, the dangers of proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, the dangers of creating so many people out there who hate us, it seems to me the wise strategy is to focus on those who we clearly can identify as creating problems, and creating problems not just for the world, but problems which are now coming home to roost.
We'll take a short break and turn my guest, Norman Finkelstein.
This is GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
All right, back live. My guest is Norman Finkelstein, the book The Holocaust Industry. And folks, it's a paperback, and it is an excellent read. And it gives you as much modern history on probably the area of the most tension in the last 50 years. And, of course, it is on the subject that has had more press than any other subject. And he has documented that point. He mentioned it earlier on LexisNexis. 280-some days out of a year of 365 days is a lot of coverage. Now, before I go to the next caller, Norman, Israel has the nuclear power, and they defy the non-proliferation treaty.
They don't defy it. They refuse to sign it.
Yeah, they just ignore it, right?
They just ignore it.
And do as they will.
Terrible, terrible Iran. It's not abiding by the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Well, I don't know if they're abiding by it or not. It's speculation. But God only knows, at least they signed it. Israel is not even obliged to sign it. It has the special dispensation of having the right to terrorize the whole region into submission.
Yes,
because they're Jews.
It has Holocaust immunity.
It has Holocaust immunity. Exactly. You say, hey, why doesn't Israel, which we know, in the case of Iran, it's speculation. In the case of Israel, we know they have 300 nuclear devices. Why don't they dismantle their nuclear weapons? How dare you? That's anti-Semitism. That's Holocaust denial. That's this and that's that. Everything to avoid the facts.
You know that you can say that in this society, and I couldn't.
That's correct. That's why I'm saying it.
It is really interesting, yes. All right, let's go to Lon in Illinois.
Yeah, good evening, Tom and Mr. Finkelstein. Mr. Finkelstein, I do have your book. It is an excellent book. And in the book and earlier this evening on the program, you mentioned that one of the effects or the reasons for the promoters of the Holocaust industry is to squelch criticism of both Israel and American Jewry.
Correct.
But you know, in some cases, it doesn't even take criticism. I cite an article that was in a recent Chicago Sun-Times, August 8th to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
The article was headed something like or headlined, "Bank President Who Lauded Hitler on Economy Resigns."
Mm-hmm.
It was the president of a bank called the Glenview State Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And after writing, I guess the Trust Department puts out a newsletter once a month dealing
mm-hmm.
with the economy,
mm-hmm.
economic issues. And in this particular newsletter, the one, I guess, of June of this year, he had gone back in history and talked about the 1930s as opposed to now and what was going on in the world, and talked about the fact that most of the world, including Europe at that time and America, the people that ran the countries, including Franklin Roosevelt, the countries were in terrible economic times, depressions or recessions. And he pointed out that Hitler and Germany at that time had risen up, had gotten off its back, and basically was doing very well. People were working, of course,
mm-hmm.
and the economy was doing well. Now, to point out something that's an historical fact and a truth that maybe can be debated somewhat, but is an historical fact, you're not even criticizing Jewry. It got him in hot water right away. They got about 600 emails, that is the bank, from Jewish, I shouldn't say readers, because they only had 500, I think, that this went out to.
Mm-hmm.
But in essence, what happened was the Anti-Defamation League Midwestern Division and Mr. Hirschot got hold of the bank right away, and through pressure put on the bank president resigned within a week. But there's an example of it doesn't even take criticism. There was no criticism of Israel or Jewry in any sense. It was just the fact that they said something that was laudatory of National Socialist Germany back in the 1930s.
Well, I think you said it all.
I was just going to say that's very true. I can't think of too many things.
It's become a taboo subject, and the taboo has kind of spread. It's even spread in totally irrelevant areas.
Yes.
You know, whether or not Nazi Germany had a successful economy has nothing whatever to do with your judgment about the Nazi Holocaust.
Exactly.
Say, for example, you were to make the claim that the United States economy in the 19th century was very successful. In fact, it was. It laid the foundation for the industrialization of America. But making that statement does not mean that you approve of slavery. They're separate issues.
Correct.
But the Holocaust has become so entrenched, as you pointed out, that any mention of history of Hitler has to be that he's the worst demon in history, far worse than Stalin and Mao.
Look, he was a nasty piece of work. There's no question about that. But there are a lot of nasty pieces of work in history, and the object is to, as one of your earlier callers said, the object is not to cast a taboo on any subject, but to allow for free and open discussion so we can get at the truth. Having a discussion doesn't mean you approve of what somebody else has to say. Having a discussion means that it's only in the course of discussion that you can find out the truth. It doesn't mean you approve of what someone else says. It's simply a method. It's the method for discovering truth.
Yeah, that's what the program is all about.
Yeah, let's face it, Mr. Finkelstein, if that bank president had written something concerning Stalin's or Lenin's
I agree.
Lenin's Russia, there would
I
have been
agree.
No criticism.
He'd probably have been promoted.
Yeah.
Okay, Lon, good
yeah.
point.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I agree with that. He would probably have been promoted.
Yep. Harry in Texas.
Hi, good evening, Tom and Mr. Finkelstein. What part does this fellow Bronson up in Canada play in all of this?
He's one of the world's bigger crooks.
Okay.
He's the head of the world. He was the head of the World Jewish Congress. And basically, if you look at the facts of the situation, and I will document them extensively, or I have documented them extensively, in a new version of the Holocaust industry that's coming out in September, it turns out that Edgar Bronfman, who's the heir to the Seagram's liquor fortune, Edgar Bronfman was one of the biggest contributors to President Clinton's electoral campaign. And the what he got in return for his contributions to Clinton's electoral campaign was the Clinton administration's support for the attacks against European governments, the Holocaust compensation racket. It was a mutual washing of hands. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. Bronfman was perhaps, it's not entirely clear, he may have been the largest single contributor to Clinton's electoral reelection, electoral campaign. And Clinton, in return, allowed him to use the offices of the U.S. government to go after the Europeans for so-called Holocaust compensation.
I see. Well, thank you very much. You
thank you, Harry. Excellent call. I appreciate it very much. This now I lost my train of thought. I had a question I was going to jump right in on there, and I was going to go back to D'Amato. D'Amato had to be in on that, and yet he's a Republican, so both parties, it's a bipartisan.
Well, D'Amato was a senator from New York.
Yes.
And New York, there's a large organized Jewish vote, and there's also a very wealthy Jewish community. And he wanted the Jewish vote as well as the Jewish financial contributions. So he joined in with the Holocaust industry. And even though it's an interesting point, that was exactly at the moment when D'Amato was holding the Whitewater hearings, which were an attack on Clinton. Clinton and D'Amato buried the hatchet as they both went to work, even though theoretically they were political adversaries, as they both went to work in support of the Holocaust industry.
That is really interesting. For all the folks out there that argue back and forth, Democrat, Republican, I don't see any difference between either one of them.
I don't either.
All right. Now, is it true? This is one I heard recently, and I thought of your book when I heard it, that the Holocaust hucksters are going after Poland. And
well,
Poland is saying, hell, we got no money.
Poland.
Huh?
They were going after Poland. Basically, what happened is, as I mentioned to you a moment ago, the whole Holocaust industry depended for its effectiveness in blackmailing Europe, depended on the support of the Clinton administration. And once the Clinton administration was voted out, the compensation racket basically collapsed. And so there were all of these claims claims leveled against the Poles, But once Clinton left office, most of those claims collapsed.
Now, extortion is a crime. Is it possible?
I agree.
Is it possible that one of these Swiss banks that has really paid through the nose could file a suit and say we were extorted?
No, because the Swiss banks, for their point of view, they paid the extortion money, the campaign ended, and they don't want to discuss it anymore.
So they're going to just take their lumps?
Yeah, because they pay the money.
Interesting, interesting world.
They pay the money to silence the Holocaust industry, and the Holocaust industry took the money and ran.
All right, this book is a definite read for any, in my opinion, for anybody who wants to understand history in our modern times, because you cover a great deal of history as you go through the so-called Holocaust shakedown in the Holocaust industry. And I think that you have done a monumental job. And I certainly do feel that, I don't know what else to say to you. You've covered it all very thoroughly tonight as well. And I think I'll just let you have a chance here in the next few minutes before the break to wrap her up. Tell us any apart here.
Well,
you go back, you have an ending in this thing.
I guess my ending is a fairly...
No, we got another caller. Never mind. We'll get your ending in a minute. Let's go to Ray in Vermont. Yeah, I wondered what happened to you guys. All right.
Hello.
Hello, Ray. Come on up. I'll get Norman Finkelstein's ending after you.
Okay. Just very, very shortly, you mentioned the motto's quest for Jewish money. What about Arnold Schwarzenegger's quest when he donates millions and millions of dollars every picture, a percentage of every picture, to Elie Wiesel organization who supports this guy who says he loves Hitler?
Well, look, it's the same payoff. I don't want to attack Schwarzenegger's...
Why not?
Wait, I don't want to attack his political past for two reasons. Number one, I don't know enough about it. And number two, nobody should be held responsible for the crimes of his or her parents. You're responsible for what you did or didn't do.
Sir,
your parents did.
Schwarzenegger admitted in public that he loves Hitler.
Well, that I'm not aware of. I said to you, I don't claim to have a knowledge of Schwarzenegger.
Well, isn't it hypocritical for the Jewish organization to support a guy who says he hates Christians and loves Hitler?
No, Ray, he's not arguing with you. He's already pointed out that Simon Wiesenthal Center is one of the biggest hypocritical outfits
right,
of them all.
What I was going to say is, even if Schwarzenegger's background were clean, the Simon Wiesenthal Center would still use what his father did in order to smear him, because that's the way to extort money from Schwarzenegger. They tell him, either you pay up or we're going to smear it across all the newspapers across the country that your father was a Nazi.
Okay.
So my point is that whether what's said about Schwarzenegger's ancestry and his beliefs, whether they're true or not, is irrelevant for the Holocaust industry.
I agree.
They use anything to extort money.
Yeah, that's the picture I got from this whole thing, the hypocritical... This is a guy who goes around saying how bad the Holocaust was, and he's known as the Nazi hunter, and yet he's supporting a guy that claims that he loves and worships Adolf Hitler.
I totally agree with you on that.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Ray.
Before you get off, can you give me quickly a source for these things about Schwarzenegger? Because I'd like to check them. Where did you come across it?
Ray, did you leave already? I think he bailed out. I'm sure that somebody out there knows, and the Internet's probably got something, but I have to double-check everything you get there.
Well, if you go into Google.com and you put in Schwarzenegger Hitler, you'll probably get 2 zillion hits.
Yes.
That's the problem with the Internet. Because everybody has something to say about everything, and then you can't find out what you need.
Yes, well, I heard a radio talk show host, and you can't trust them either, you know.
And he said that?
Well, he said something about he was very angry that they said that Schwarzenegger's father was a police captain. He says, a police captain, hell, he was a Nazi something officer, and he went on and on about
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how true that is.
Right. Well, look, even if it's true, you're not responsible for your parents, in my opinion.
All right, we've got another one. Late timer wants to take a shot. Will in Missouri, come on up.
Hello, Tom.
Why do you guys always wait so long?
Well, I just wanted to see where the direction was going, but I have one question and a comment. I study a lot of old books. I search and search and search and find them. And I've got a 1959 Funk and Wagnall encyclopedia in front of me.
Uh-huh.
And in this one, now this is pre-1960, it's pre-1967. And it tells you here that the number of Jews in pre-war Germany totaled about 500,000.
Correct. 600,000.
Okay. But the Jewish community was all but wiped out during the period of Nazi ascendancy.
That's now, incorrect. Well, I mean, a large number, but not entirely wiped out.
Yes.
Because a lot of the Jews were wealthy enough to leave.
Yes, I understand that. So my question is then, where did the other 4.5 million come from?
Because Nazi-occupied Europe included most of Western Europe as well as large parts of Eastern Europe. And the heart of European Jewry was in Poland. There were about 3 million Jews. And in Russia, there were about 5 million Jews.
Yes.
So the full length and breadth of the Nazi empire extended to large concentrations of Jews.
Yes. But as soon as they cross out of Germany, they're then fighting against an enemy, and that would be a war casualty.
Well,
you can look at it. Hold on, we got to take a break. You hear the music? I got to take a break. We'll be right back. Okay, this is the final segment of tonight's program, and Will had just called in, and you were going in on, and he makes an interesting point. I know that the Eisengruppen, the ones that did all the machine gunning of the people in Eastern Europe, there's a lot of people who would claim that that was warfare.
Look, there are those who are military casualties. We call them combatants, and then there are those who are civilian casualties. Combatants are victims of war. Civilian casualties are victims of crimes against humanity. They are different kinds of crimes because it's accepted, for better or for worse, I'm not going to argue, it's accepted that if somebody with arms is about to take your life, you have the right, in the name of self-defense, to take that other person's life. That's a military combatant. But no moral, there's no moral support for the idea that you have the right to take the life of a civilian. Now, the Jews who were killed during World War II were not combatants. It wasn't a question of self-defense. It was civilians who were rounded up, put in ghettos, then put in concentration camps, and then systematically exterminated. That's a war crime.
I agree.
It's different.
Now, we got to get one more caller in before the end of the night and before your summary. Roger in Pennsylvania.
Yes, thanks, Jens. Very quickly, that was Alex Jones that put that out about Schwarzenegger's saying he loved Hitler and all.
Alex Jones?
Yes, and also saying he wanted to be sort of the head of national police, etc. So you could probably get links off Infowars.com or Prison Planet. God bless.
All right. Infowars.com. Alex Jones is another talk show host on this network.
Uh-huh.
And that could be where I heard it.
Okay.
All right. This book needs to be talked about because there are so many ramifications. And I need to point out, we haven't done so, that in your final chapter on the Double Shakedown, you go into detail of all these different trust commissions in different countries, and you document your allegations, and there is just no doubt that this was a whale of a shakedown.
It was a whale, I agree.
All right, sir. Well, Norman Finkelstein, I really appreciate you coming on. You're about the third... self-hating Jew that I've encountered. Israel Shahak, the late Israel Shahak, was called that. Noam Chomsky, I noticed that you know him.
Yeah, they're both former. Shahak was a former friend. Chomsky is a current friend.
Well, these gentlemen are all very courageous and outspoken people, as you are. And I want to thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure.
Tonight.
Have a good night.
All right. Good night, sir. And, folks, this book, great way to support Radio Free America. You can get a copy of it. Just send me a $20 donation. That's why I decided to do it this way. I'm not going to try to be a merchandiser. I am not good at that sort of thing. But I would like your support, and this is an outstanding book for an intelligent person to read, and I have plenty of copies of them. So for every support check for $20 or more to Radio Free America, or RFA, that I get, this book will go out. Just send a little note, say, hey, I'll take that book, and here's your donation. The address is RFA, Post Office Box 11654, Naples, Florida. Zip code is 34101. Naples is pronounced N, Nancy, A, P, Peter, L, E, S. Naples, Florida, 34101. And I can use all the help I can get. I don't know what's coming up next week. I know what's coming up in 2 weeks. But I know in 2 weeks we're going to have a talk about cold fusion. This really interesting energy. Next week, well, I'm working on a couple of things, and I guarantee you it'll be different, and you will like it. In fact, I've got several things I'm working on. So we'll see you then. Thanks, everybody. They're playing my song.
Herbal Healer Academy is a global supplier of the finest natural medicine that you may need in these troubled times. We specialize in keeping